But yeah, oh fuck's sake, I've fucked up here. Start again.
Oh no, this is comedy.
Hi and welcome to the next edition of the Are You Ready podcast. I know yous are going already.
Professional.
Professional. Hi and welcome to the Are You Ready podcast. We're back after a self-imposed hiatus with us being on holiday there. Dave's actually still on holiday. I'm back obviously now, but we've got two new guests with us today. Two good friends I've known for years, both staunch Rangers fans. We've got Scott and John. How are you doing, Scott?
Hi, Derek. Thanks very much for having me on.
Excellent. And John, yourself?
Yeah, doing good, mate. Pleased to be on the show.
Excellent. So just to kind of run a bit of background, me and Scott and John have known each other for years. We've been to home and away games together. We've supported Rangers through thick and thin. We've had our disagreements, obviously, about that, especially me and Scott with Boyd and Big Ed and things like that. Isn't that right, Scott?
Don't drag up the past.
So, yeah, we've kind of done that through thick and thin. So it's just another couple of voices for you to listen to, another few opinions. That's what it's all about at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's it, Dale. I mean, we've all listened to your first few podcasts, been very impressed. So we're just here hopefully to add another voice to the Rangers saga, really, and just hopefully we can give a good opinion and viewpoint, and it won't be so much of a fuck up, and hopefully it'll be pretty smooth.
Absolutely, Scott.
That's all we can ask.
You got anything to add to that, Scott?
I agree with John's sentiments, and we're just here to keep Dave's seat warm, really.
He'll be back soon enough, and if you're decent at it and you don't do many fuck ups, then you'll be back anyway. So. So to crack on, we've got a few bits and pieces to cover this week. We're going to try and keep it under the hour, which is a tough edit these days, but we'll certainly get on cracking on, and we'll go down the tunnel and onto the field. This game was Ayr United. It was an away game on Sunday the 6th of October. Briefly read out the team here. We've got Bell in goals, back four of Wallace, McCulloch, Mosney and Foster. Black playing the one in front of them. We had a midfield four of Little, McLeod, Law, Peralta and Daly, the target man, up front on his own. In the subs bench, we had Simonson in goal, Clark, Foray, Crawford, Templeton, Aird and Smith. Don't know what you want to think about this game, but again, it was a bit of another turgid affair, was it not?
I would say, I wouldn't go quite that far. I think the weeks preceding, I know there's been games in the past, particularly away games, where we've struggled big time to create any chances. And I think in this game, the first half was kind of following that plan, where it was tough for us to create anything. But I thought the second half, we came into the game a lot better and created a few chances, and we were comfortable winners in the end.
Well, what do you think of that, Scott?
Well, I personally find it hard to get that worked up about performances at this stage, as it's a bit of a means to an end. As long as we keep winning, I'm content with that. You look at the table, played the 8-1-8, goal difference of 32. I find that hard to fault.
Well, I mean, certainly that's a valid point, because we are still winning. Regardless of how we're performing, we are still getting the goals in, quite a few of them obviously, and we're still getting the points. And the one thing I would say certainly from last year is, last year we played fairly bad, we lost the games, we played average, we drew the games, and we're now, you know, playing decently, and we're not looking as if we're losing games, and we're winning the games. So that's probably the main point, but I just felt that we created very little up front again, and it was really two wonder goals really that saved the day.
I get your point, but to me, I still think that there was chances that we had in the game. I can think of two opportunities when we really should have scored. I think Daly had a chance in the first half that he should have scored, and Lee Wallace right at the very end of the game. And I thought overall our performance, it was okay. I get what you're saying, that it wasn't certainly not the performance we've had the week previous when we won 8-0. So there was not the same urgency getting forward as there was in that game. You know, I think 2-0 was probably about fair, and I think we were certainly done enough to win the game.
Just to run over some of the points of the game there, on the 4th minute, an Ayr player got in front of Foster. He cuts the ball back into the centre, who hits a shot and it hit off the post, then back into Bell's arms. It was a bad bit of play from Foster, I thought, for the fact that he let the player get in front of him to whip the ball in. We got off lightly in that one.
Very slack. I was quite just, sorry to interrupt, but yeah, Foster, very slack. He was sleeping on the right-hand side, thinking it was going out for a goal kick, just went to sleep. He allowed the boy to get in, and we were lucky, really, that we didn't concede.
I mean, I don't know what your thoughts on Foster so far, but I just find he's done nothing, like I said last week, he's done nothing wrong as such, apart from a few incidents like that, but then he's done anything special to warrant a place.
I'd say with Foster, the thing that I've noticed about him since the last time he was at us, he looks to have lost his pace. I think that was his main attribute back when he was with us on loan, was, you know, he was fast, he was nippy, he was up and down the right-hand side. He seems to have lost a yard for me. I don't think he was ever the best right back there ever was. And I think the games he's played thus far, he has went to sleep on a couple of occasions. And like you said in previous pods, Dale, I think McCausland at this point really should be getting a chance to nail down that right back slot.
Yeah. What's your thoughts, Scott?
Well, you and Dave had mentioned previously that you were disappointed that McCausland had been dropped, and I would certainly agree with that. I find that the differences between his first spell at the club are that, like John says, he's lost that yard of pace, and positionally, I think he's found wanting at times. Mm-hmm. So I would certainly bring McCausland back in, probably,
yeah.
But I don't think that's going to happen.
I mean, I think in his first spell as well, he was the old-fashioned wing-back, wasn't he? He was bombing up and down the wing, and he was getting places and putting good crosses in. Whereas, as John said, he seems to have lost that kind of pace. So, yeah, that's something that certainly needs to get looked into as well. Just moving on from the game there. A lot of our play seemed to be, especially in the first half, is long, high balls up front. I don't know if that was conducive of the fact that we were playing just with one up front, the target man, and Daly. We seem to think that, well, big, tall guy playing up there himself can gather all these long, high balls to him, but it just didn't work for me.
Yeah, I would say so. I think just the fact that Daly's up there, it's going to be hard not to play that type of game. Just the size that he is good at holding the play up and holding the ball and little knockdowns and what have you. But I would certainly like us to play more of a game passing along the deck, passing the ball and creating chances that way. But I think just the sheer fact that you've got Daly, then you know you sort of want to play his strengths, which you know does include basically lobbing the ball up to the big man and just hoping he can hold on to it.
Yeah. 16th minute, we had a great through ball played by Daly to Little. Little ended up one-on-one with the keeper, narrow at an angle. McLeod had at this point drifted off into the middle of the box, unmarked. What happened from there is Little tried to have a shot, but it never paid off for him.
I remember being incredibly frustrated at the time because I was thinking, right, this is a goal. I think Little should have had, I don't think he even had a shot. Was he not trying to pass it along to
McLeod? That's what he'd done, yeah.
He was sort of in two minds as to what to do. I would have preferred to see him just go for it, and I think he basically had too long to think about it, and he was trying to pass it to McLeod, and McLeod was miles away. So, yeah, it was pretty poor decision-making on Little's part.
I mean, even me, I'd watched the game because I was away. I'd just watched the game a few days ago there. And even though I knew we weren't going to score, I see myself flinging my arms up in frustration because how wasteful that was, and it should have been a goal.
He's quite an unselfish player, though. But often to his detriment, I'd say that he probably needs to find that ruthless streak.
Yeah,
that's my top quality centre forward.
That's a definite valid point there. You're certainly correct, I would say. He certainly scored a barrel load of goals last year. He's no done the same this year. I don't know whether that's his lost confidence or the fact that he's more or less playing out in the wing more often than not.
Well, I think he's still scoring. The thing with Little is, I think he is a frustrating player. I mean, looking at him, like being at games and watching on the telly, he's probably the player that frustrates me the most, actually, just because he does score goals, and if you look at his record, even this season, he has scored goals and he's made a few assists as well. So he's involved in the games, but I think sometimes his first touch lets him down, and at times his decision-making as well can be poor. So I think, again, once we get to the Premier League, then I don't know if he's the type of player that we'll be looking to play, really. Like I say, I think he's frustrating. But you can't argue with his goal record. At this level especially, it's pretty fantastic.
Right, just moving on here. Just after that, actually, Ayr got a free kick from about 25 yards out. Forced a save out of Bell, who forced it over the bar. That was another wee chance from Ayr there. On the 20th minute, there was great build-up play from us. Ball came to Jig from about 30 yards out, and he had an absolute rocket of a shot, which went straight at the keeper. Forced the keeper to kind of make a half-hearted save, which, you know, I don't think it really bothered the keeper that much, but certainly it was a worthwhile effort from us anyway.
Yeah, it was straight down the middle, from what I remember. But I think in the build-up to the actual shot, it was pretty good play. All the midfield getting involved, and like you say, Jig just saw an opportunity to have a shot on target. Why not? And he was unlucky, really.
Yeah. So we had a free kick from Wallace from about 18 yards out. Placed the ball under a jumping wall, which forced the keeper into another comfortable save. So I suppose at least there we're getting a chance there, but again, it was about a half chance.
Yeah, he was never going to score, I think. Just, it wasn't powerful enough, really. The keeper saw it all the way. Easy enough for him.
When was the last time you had a set-piece specialist?
It's a good question. I'm struggling to think. Well, I think Peralta not meant to be somewhat of a free-kick specialist. I don't think he's taken, apart from the game that he played, the friendly pre-season, you know, he scored a free-kick there. I don't think he's taken many free-kicks since then, but I know he's on the corners and he's delivered a few into the box, which we've scored from, so hopefully he's the man to take the free-kicks and corners and be a danger.
I'm just trying to think, Jelovic maybe, would that be right?
Well, he did score a few free kicks, didn't he? I remember that.
Aye.
I hit a few, but before him, you're going back to the likes of Van Bronckhorst and guys like that. It's going way back.
In the rest of the first half, there was a few other chances for both teams. Nothing really clear-cut, to be honest. There was nothing much of note to say. Just overall, I suppose we controlled the game in terms of possession, but we never created much. There was a few chances both for ourselves and there. There was just a real lack of creativity, and it was more of a midfield game, which arguably you could say, because we had the four in midfield with the black plane just behind, it was maybe too overcrowded and there wasn't enough balls getting forward. So I don't know what your thoughts on that are.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, like we mentioned earlier, there wasn't a great deal of chances, particularly in the first half. And as you say, the midfield was kind of packed, and Daly was sort of cutting a lone figure up top on his own. So that's something that we obviously looked to address at half time, and I think we did, and we went into the second half and played a lot better.
Going into the second half then, just before the 52nd minute, Wojny comes up and scores an absolute screamer. Ball was floated down in from the box from a free kick, chested down by Little, who had his back to goal. It found Wojny, who turned first in a first-time shot into the back of the net from about 15 yards. What a player this guy's turning out to be for me. I don't know what you think there.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. I think Mojny's come in, you can't argue with his goal record. He's scored, is that his fourth or fifth goal now? So
he's averaging a goal a game, I think.
Which, you know, for a defender, you can't ask for any more. But, I mean, the goal itself was absolute quality. Like you say, a little lovely little chest down, and Mojny just turns and shoots back to goal. Didn't even look at the goal, just knew where the target was. It was a fantastic strike, and I think so far he's been a great signing for us.
Mm-hmm. That was a lovely finish in the back of the net before the keeper really knew where he was. I definitely think this guy's got a potential cult hero status. I find him to be a bit of a cross between Peugeot and Carlos Quella.
And he's maybe got some of the madness of Bugera as well.
True. And I love the black boots, by the way.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. I did notice that during the game. A bit of old school quality there with the black boots. What I would say as well for Mojny is that I noticed a few times in the game he was crashing into the headers. Like, I think he clattered into a couple of his own teammates at times, and I can see him being pretty rash on occasion, so I think he needs to maybe cut that out of his game, because I can see a lot of bookings in his future.
Yeah, I think he did get booked in the first half actually.
But at the same time, you know, you do kind of like that aggression as well, just having that little bit about him. But I think, like Scott says, you know, he's got cult hero written all over him. Just, you know, his look, he's obviously got a bit of Bugera about him, in the sense that he'll get up from defence and try and beat a player. And as we can see with his goal, he's got a goal on him as well. So all things considered, so far so good for him.
Absolutely, yep. 3 minutes after that, we got our second of the game. I don't know what you want to say about this, but this was an absolute wonder goal. One of the best overhead kicks I've ever seen.
Peach. That was a peach. It was an absolute peach. I mean, the corner, I think, was it came in from Peralta, swung in the corner, I think.
I think that was, yeah.
Yeah, and Mojny was involved for that, the goal as well, getting a head on, and McLeod just back to goal, overhead kick, point blank range. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, I was away for the game, obviously, and I heard about, you know, I think, Scott, you texted me initially, and I asked what it was about, and then you sent me an email with the picture still of the goal. Absolutely stunning.
There was a gif on Twitter within about 20 minutes.
Brilliant.
Lovely goal.
Yeah, I mean, some people were going back to saying it's you know, Pele-esque and things like that, so absolutely stunning goal, and this guy's got some skill as well.
I wouldn't go that far, number one. I wouldn't go quite that far. But it was a fantastic strike, absolutely fantastic. And he's definitely something about
this, it wasn't quite in the same ballpark as even Trevor Sinclair, QPR. I won't take any away from it. It was a great strike.
Absolutely brilliant. And certainly, if he gets his game, which he is doing regularly now, he's going to be some player in the future for us. And he's obviously proven what he can be like just now. And he's getting high praise from a lot of people in the media just now.
Yeah, I think McLeod's definitely the cream of the crop that we have as far as the young players are concerned. And just the fact that he's playing every week, he's obviously a mainstay in the team now, and he's only whatever age he is, 19, so he's still a young lad, still learning, but there's tons of potential there, and hopefully he can be at the club for many years to come.
Right, just to go over the rest of the game now, I mean, that happened on the 57th minute. Not much happened in the rest of the game. There was a few chances again here and there. Nothing really of note, nothing really clear cut that you would say. Templeton came on for Little on the 73rd minute. Arguably, he had a good few chances straight off. Had a wee shot in the 77th minute from about 25 yards and was just over. He seemed to have a bit of urgency about him.
A wee shot from 25 yards.
A wee shot, just a wee shot. Peralta came off on the 86th minute and Robbie Crawford came on, which of note there was apparently a Robbie Crawford in the Ayr United team as well.
That's right, yeah. They were commenting on the actual game itself. There's only two Robbie Crawfords was the chant.
There wasn't really enough, certainly not. Just to kind of summarise the whole game overall, as we said, it was much the same as the first half. You know, it was a solid performance as such without creating much. I kind of still think it was a bit of a turgid affair.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'll respectfully disagree with you, Derek. Just in the sense that these away games, they are tough, and we've seen in the past, especially last season, you know, a lot of the away games were, as you say, turgid affairs, really disappointing that we didn't create much. I think this season, generally speaking, we've been better. I know there's been a couple, I think, against Forfar and what have you, that were really, really poor. But this game, I thought we played okay, and we had chances to add to the two goals. Like you say, the two goals that we did score were fantastic goals, pieces of magic, but I think overall we've got to be happy with getting the win. You know, continuing the fact that we're unbeaten and we've won every single game, and just hopefully that can continue.
Yeah, I mean, I've said before, if we're winning and we're playing badly or we're not playing as well as we should play, I suppose it's splitting hairs. But I think from going looking at the Stenhouse Muir game, I think that should be the benchmark now for the way we play. Play all the players in their right positions, play the 4-4-2 when it suits, obviously, and you know we could get results like that week in, week out. So are you anything to add, Scott?
Well, we'd probably say we joined there. It was workmanlike, it was clinical, and it's like I said, it's played 8-1-8, I'm happy with that.
Yeah. Maybe I'm just being overly critical because I've seen what we can do when we want to, and maybe that's just me. That's my opinion, obviously. So obviously we agree to disagree in that one, but that's what it's all about, opinions at the end of the day.
You said it, though.
I said it, yes. Right, so who would you say is your man of the match of the game then?
For me, personally, I think the best player was Ian Black. I thought in the midfield, he kept it simple. I mean, he'd done the classic Ian Black thing. He was there to take a pass and move the ball on, and he protected the back four. He rarely wasted a pass. I think up until maybe the last couple of minutes, there was a few dodgy passes here and there, but generally speaking, his passing was spot on. He was always there to take a pass and just basically dictated play from his position in front of the back four.
Scott, who's your man of the match?
Yeah, I mean, I don't like to agree with John so often, but I would definitely say Ian Black. I think we're definitely seeing the side team Black that we saw in his last season for Hearts when did he captain them to the Scottish Cup?
I think he did, actually, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was the player Rangers bought, and well, last season they had these difficulties. I definitely think we're seeing what we paid for.
Kind of hard to disagree with what you're saying. He's certainly turned a corner, it seems to be, this season. But for me, I have to give it to Mojny. Scored the goal, involved in the McLeod goal as well. Overall, great play, and especially from a kind of centre-back, the way he's getting forward and doing his business. I know he got booked for a kind of stupid challenge, but at the end of the day, you know, he's playing well, and he certainly seems to be a decent player who we've bought. So that's my man of the match anyway.
Well, you can't argue with a goal and assist, Derek. That's what you want for a fantasy football player. That's a lot of points right there.
I wish he was in my fantasy football team anyway, because mine's are doing shite.
That's true. Are you bottom of the league, Derek? I think
I'm second bottom now.
Oh well, not so bad.
Yes.
Once you got rid of Gareth Bale, things changed.
Yeah, I did, yeah. I thought that was an obvious stick-on choice though at the start, but then obviously there was a rumour.
Did you know the rumours, Derek? No,
did you miss that?
I did, but yeah. I was kind of hopeful he was going to stay. Maybe overly hopeful, so. Anyway, next game we've got is Brechin away on the 19th of October. Obviously, we should have played Dunfermline yesterday, but for dubious circumstances, it got postponed for allegedly the internationals. However, obviously, some people, including myself, have got suspicions it's been because the board were taking flak at the last home game and they wanted to avoid that before the AGM.
We've got a deep enough squad. I find it a bit bizarre.
Yeah. I mean, I think McCoy's came out and said it was something like 9 players we might lose, but even then, I mean, as you said, we've got a deep enough squad to surely, you know, take into that account. I would maybe understand if we're playing in the Premiership and up against, you know, your Motherwells or your Celtics, what have you. Potential team, what do you think about that? Same again, or...?
Yeah, I think it's pretty much got to be. I'm trying to think if anyone can come in. I think maybe Templeton's maybe due a start. For me, like I said earlier, I don't know, Andy Little, he's the most frustrating player for me. I sometimes feel if we're going one up top and that's going to be John Daly, then I might like to see Templeton get a shot on the wing. I don't know.
What's happened to Nicky Clark?
It's hard to say. It looks like he's somewhat out of favour. I don't know if Ali just doesn't fancy him. I know he'd started a couple of games, but... since the last game he started, for 3 or 4 games ago, he's not had a look in, so I don't know. He's maybe due a start as well. I wouldn't mind seeing him and John Daly again with a 4-4-2. That'd be quite good.
Yeah. I mean, I think from what I've heard on one of the other pods is, you know, obviously people are asking the same questions, what's happening to him. And I think what the situation is, as you said, he's out of favour, but maybe we're expecting him to be playing because he's a new player and we want to see what he's doing.
No, I think he's shown what he can do in that division last season, scoring 20 odd goals.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, you would like to think he would be in a position for that, but from what he's done, he obviously scored in the first 20 odd seconds of his debut, and I don't think he's done much else when he started though in the other games, has he?
I think he was quite quiet. I know there was a game I went to when he started, and he wasn't involved a great deal. So I don't know if that's maybe what's made Ali's decision. But again, even if that is the case, he's been given limited opportunity to show what he can do. So you think he would get an opportunity at some point to get a run of games and hopefully start scoring goals?
Yep, absolutely. Me, I would just like to see I go back to the 4-4-2, or even playing, what was it, the 4-1-3-2? Was he playing in the pre-season? You know, trying something going similar like that, because we obviously were doing well in pre-season. 4-4-2 and players in their right positions, as we've seen what happened with Stenis Muir, and we absolutely smashed them. So I would like to go back to that.
I love that 4-4-2 there, we love it.
It's my classic Football Manager team, even though I'm shit at that as well.
I don't disagree with you, Dale. I think we want to see attacking football, and you know, like we got the other week against Steny, beating them 8-0, we want to see that every week, but the reality is it's not going to be possible, is it? I mean, we know that ourselves, that you're not going to get that type of performance and result every single week. So I think, you know, we've got to make the best of the team is what we can, and at the moment, the way that he's playing, I personally as well would like to see, if Peralta's going to be playing, then I'd like to see him shoved into the centre of midfield as opposed to out wide. And like you mentioned in previous pods, just playing players in their normal positions, I think it would be a step in the right direction.
Yeah, because I don't think Peralta is even a winger, is he?
No, not at all. I mean, well, pre-season when he came in, he was presented to us as this tough tackling centre midfielder who could also potentially, I think, play right back. But he's been punted out wide right, and he doesn't look entirely comfortable at this point in time. So at the same time though, it would appear to me that Ian Black's kind of playing that position for us, and he's playing it well. So I don't know if they're just trying to shove Peralta into the team just for the sake of it, just to sort of shove him in, but I think I would prefer to see, you know, someone in that position, you know, who's comfortable playing there.
Right, so we've discussed that for quite a bit now, so we will move on to the next section, which is the Blue Room.
Quite simply, we're the only club in the world who could do that. We are the people.
So the Blue Room is a section we discuss the goings-on in the board. I know that there's not much to talk about these days, is there?
Aye. A couple of statements came out last night, Derek, as you're probably well aware.
Yep. The first statement came out was from Craig Mather, just discussing the fact that he's had talks with Dave King, a former investor and potentially future investor. And then obviously another statement came out literally minutes later from Dave King through the official channels, again through Rangers, saying that he's held talks and he is looking to become the new chairman of Rangers, and with a potential to invest shortly as well. So I don't know. Certainly, I think it's a good thing. I think that he'll bring some stability, hopefully. It's obviously going to depend on, is he going to be working with the existing board, or is he going to be trying to get the new requisitioners in, or is he going to be wanting to get his own people in, or what have you. Certainly the investment, if he wants to invest in us again, that's obviously going to be more than welcome. It's something that obviously, given the accounts were announced last week, that we are in, or a week and a half ago now, that we're in drastic need of some funding somewhere, or to plug the leak of funds anyway. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would agree with you, Derek. I think, you know, Dave King's obviously a Rangers man. He's got Rangers in his blood. He's put money into the club before when, you know, David Murray was in charge. Sunk it in and he lost it. And the fact that he's willing to come back and put more money in potentially, I think shows his commitment to the club. So I think it's definitely a positive move. But like you say, it depends on whether or not he's willing to work with the existing board that's in place at the moment, and I know there's some doubt over whether that will be the case. I mean, certainly Craig Mather's statement that he put out on the club website seemed to indicate that Dave King would be happy to be working with the existing board that's in place.
Mm-hmm. Scott? But,
well, the turkey's not going to vote for Christmas, is it?
Absolutely not, no. I mean, that's the point that I've kind of picked up on as well, with you just mentioned there, John, is the fact that he has invested $20 million in the past, he's lost it, and he's still willing to kind of come back and put more money in. So I don't think you can question his loyalty to the club anyway. I know he was a director before, and that's, you know, he's obviously linked with the old regime, as it were.
His statement reads very well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he talks about how we have to prepare over the next few seasons financially and on the pitch to compete when we get back to the top league, and that crucially we don't have time to waste.
Yeah, I mean, I think on the pitch anyway, we could have built up a team with a new footballing ethos, as it were. So I think we've wasted that and such, because we've obviously got the you know, old SPL players in. Whereas I think off the field we've done the exact same, and we've just basically buggered away, you know, the money. We shouldn't have been losing $14 million certainly for a third division club. It seems to have just been wasted on bonuses and salaries and such like that. And for, as I said last week, to have your non-playing staff wages more than your playing staff wages, I don't think there's ever been a club that's happened it. So obviously there's something going amiss there, and by the sound of it, obviously not wanting to get into trouble with certain people and getting threatened with legal documents and things like that, but I think that there's a few porky pies being told about where the money's gone.
I'd say so, yeah. I think I'm right in thinking as well, Derek, that there was a meeting at the end of last week with Craig Mather, Brian Stockbridge, and I think the supporters clubs.
There was, yes.
The Supporters Trust, and they had a meeting, and I read, sort of skimmed through the minutes of that meeting, and it appeared to me again that a lot of the answers that they were given were very vague. Didn't seem to be a lot of answers, basically, to the questions that were asked. And there's definitely something not right at the club, and hopefully if Dave King can come in, get his foot in the door, then things can change. And obviously we've got the next couple of weeks till the AGM and things like that, then it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks, and we'll obviously see what the developments will be from that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think this meeting was as open to the fans as the last one was with all the directors and Craig Mather. But certainly, as you said, the minutes of the meeting were put up by the RST and all the other supporters associations. And you're right, it did seem to leave a lot to be desired, a lot of vague answers to questions. You know, they were called out on a few things about not telling us the whole truth the last time, about giving figures out, and, you know, Stockbridge was pressed on that, the fact that he couldn't tell certain bits of information due to legal issues. It was pointed out the fact to him that, you know, you said that the last time, but then you know 2 days later you came out in the papers and gave that answer.
Yeah.
So certainly from his point of view, it's a bit worrying from some of the answers he's given out, considering the financial position we're in. And I think it did come out as well saying by the end of April we're only going to have £1 million left in the bank. It's losing more than £1 million a month from then until now. What is going on there? That's what I want to know. And I think that's what every fan wants to know as well. Where the hell is the money going?
Well, that's it. I mean, it's ridiculous if you think about it, and that's a sorry state of affairs. I mean, ultimately, what we don't want to happen is, and I know that the threat's been there, that, you know, we go back into administration, and that's something that, you know, we're hopeful doesn't happen. And what we need is someone to come in and make sure that the finances are dictated in such a way where we're not, you know, hemorrhaging the money that we seem to be at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Dave King wants to look at the finances first, doesn't he, before any investment gets made. I think that was part of his condition.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's only fair, especially you're not wanting to go and sink loads of millions of pounds in again and, you know, be in the same situation and being in administration or losing the whole thing again. So,
yep.
Yes, just on the board as well, with the AGM coming up, obviously the requisitioners, they're looking to have a vote with the shareholders to appoint new board members and to get existing board members out. Obviously, the existing board are putting, have went to the court of session to try and put a block into this, haven't they? They don't have a democratic vote of the shareholders. Seems awfully strange, that, to me.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you would think the whole idea of a democracy would be that, you know, we can decide as shareholders, you know, who we want in the club. And it looks like the current regime, there's obviously a lot of discontent towards them. And basically, always what we want is, you know, someone in charge, someone who knows what they're doing and that can drive the club forward. And we want to be successful again. And we don't want to be back in administration. And basically, I think what we want to be off the front pages, don't we? We want to be on the back pages, so we can just concentrate on the football. We want to leave all this behind us.
Obviously, there's been a few things that have gone on in the background. There's a lot to take in over the last couple of weeks, so we're just going to leave the boardroom there. Obviously, it's about time, though, because at the end of the day, we should be talking about on-field football and things, and there's a few people out there that seem to think that, well, because everything's going well on the field, then, you know, that means that the board should be left alone to do their own thing. That's utter bollocks, and whoever holds that view needs to really get their head checked, to be honest. So,
I would say, Derek, that would be a pile of pish.
Aye, exactly.
to quote yourself, that would be a pile of pish.
Right, so we'll move on now, and we'll go to the classic match.
Manchester, brace yourself. Rangers are coming!
Right, so the classic match this week is a fairly modern match, considering we've kind of looked on a few 10-year-old plus games in the last couple of weeks. But this one is historic for the fact that it was our last SPL win, our last kind of major top-line trophy, and that was obviously the title win in 2011 against Kilmarnock. So this was on Sunday, the 15th of May, 2011. We rolled out 5-1 winners against Kilmarnock and we absolutely annihilated them on the park. Unusually, all three of us were there at the time. I remember, John, did you get tickets and you never realised it was going to be a title decider at the time?
Yeah, pretty much. I think I secured the tickets maybe 5 or 6 weeks before the game itself. So I think at that point in time, Celtic were top of the league and were looking pretty comfortable, looking like they were going to win. So ultimately, it was just taking a chance. The fact that it could have been the last day, Celtic might have already been the champions, and it would have been a bit of a damp squib. But I took the chance, and luckily enough, it worked out.
Yeah,
I remember when Celtic had dropped points to Inverness. That was the real moment where it was back in our own hands. I remember thinking, "Geez, I hope John's still got this ticket."
I hope he doesn't sell them to anyone else for an exorbitant fee.
That's right. I actually remember because that game, that was maybe the game against Inverness, that must have been maybe a week or two before the Kilmarnock game. Yeah. And Celtic obviously slipped up. They were top of the league. They got beat in Inverness, which was not expected. I think I was actually on holiday at the time. I think you were texting me, Scott, updates on the match itself. So I think I managed to.
Was it maybe a draw?
From my memory, Inverness won the game. I think it was 3-2.
Right.
If I remember correctly, because I remember I was eating dinner, and then I caught the last 10 minutes in a pub, and I think Celtic scored a late goal to make it 3-2, and then the last sort of 3 or 4 minutes was an onslaught by Celtic trying to get this goal, because I think, if I remember correctly, if they'd have got a point that game, then they still would have been top of the table. But I think that was definitely the turning point, and the league slipping away from Celtic.
Just to go over the team, we had McGregor in goals, we had Weir, Papach, Whittaker and Bugera. In midfield, we had Wild, Edu, Davis, and then we had Lafferty, Naismith, and Jelovic. On the subs bench, we had Alexander, Foster, McCulloch, Fleck, Healy, Joof, and Hutton. In goals for Kilmarnock, we had the notable Cammy Bell as well.
That's right, Cammy Bell, who my girlfriend noted the other day, bears a striking resemblance to Alan McGregor. Don't know what you think about that.
No.
No, I don't have it.
We all got to Kilmarnock. We had a few shandies on the train, didn't we? That continued in a few of the pubs before the game. It was absolutely heaving, what I can remember. Every place we went, full of bears everywhere. If I can also remember right, Kilmarnock made the unprecedented step of selling Rangers fans a lot of the tickets for most of the ground. So I think we had fans in every stand of the stadium, didn't we?
Yeah, there was pockets everywhere, right. as you soon realised when the goals started flying in.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was only Kilmarnock's season had effectively been over. They had nothing to play for. I don't think their fans were particularly bothered about it, and they were more than happy to get some money for their club, knowing that we'll obviously fill the stadium.
Yeah, I think so, but at the same time, I'm sure I remember hearing a lot at the game itself that there was, as Scott said, there was pockets of Rangers fans scattered everywhere in the stadium, and as soon as the goals started flying in and Rangers fans inevitably started celebrating, there was a lot of disgruntled Kilmarnock fans who weren't particularly happy that, you know, Rangers fans had invaded their area of the stadium. But, you know, Kilmarnock have done it, obviously, since then. You know, they've sold tickets to Celtic and what have you, and they've been doing it for a number of years. So, like you say, you know, rather that, you know, rather a full stadium than a half-empty one.
Yeah, exactly.
I imagine there's guys who went there that day looking to keep their decorum, but when you score 3 goals in 7 minutes, that goes right out the window.
Spoiler.
Absolutely.
Yes, so talking of goals, and goals they flew in, absolutely amazing. Not long did we have a chance to sit down in our seats. The Lafferty scored an absolute peach of a goal in the first minute.
Jelovic on to Davis, and Lafferty's in already. He scored inside the first minute. Kyle Lafferty makes his presence felt yet again. Rangers on their way.
Basically, the ball kind of came over through the middle, lobbed up ball, started to bounce. Lafferty had a half volley, lobbed the keeper from about maybe 20 yards. Absolutely amazing. The place absolutely erupted.
Absolutely amazing. You called it, Dale. It was good. I remember, like you said, Lafferty lobbing Cammy Bell. We were behind that goal, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was bedlam. You know, just after how many seconds? Was it 46 seconds? Something
46
like that.
Seconds, yeah.
So it was the perfect start to the match. And what I can remember about the actual match itself, there was an air of tension. Like, for me, I don't know if it was the same for you guys, but any time there was tension in the air. So to get the goal so early, I think it kind of calmed everyone down and settled the nerves. And it's a perfect way to start the game.
Yeah. I mean, I was at the game before, which was Lotto Smith's last game in charge at Ibrox. That was against Dundee United, and that was some tension. But this had a bit of different tension to it, for the fact that, well, we're so close, and obviously relying on Celtic result as well to an extent. But obviously, if we went out and won the game, then the result was regardless. It didn't really matter. So, as you said, to get the goal straight away, it really settled the nerves, and it turned out to be a party atmosphere from straight on after.
Well, I don't know if you remember the two older guys in front of us when things had died down after the first goal. These two old guys, once they'd picked up the flat caps again, one of them, right up in the other guy's face with his index finger, obviously talking about Lafferty, "I thought you said he was shite." And then his foul got right back in his face. One lob. So, at least someone still had some perspective that day.
Yeah. Well, thing is, apparently Lafferty was on he'd done the same the season before, if I can remember right.
He loved the running.
Loved the running, absolutely loved it. I think they said in the commentary that I'd watched a bit of the highlights in preparation for this, Derek. And they had mentioned that the majority of his Rangers goals had come in the last sort of cycle of the season.
Yeah.
That's when he turned up.
Exactly. Probably get a new contract or see who was in the window for him. Anyway, we never had... Yes, to move on from that arsehole anyway. We never really had enough time to, you know, take in what had just happened when we had popped up and scored another goal.
Greg Wilde. Chelsea tracking him. Naismith, Jelovic is free. Naismith did not need him. 2-0 up. Inside 5 minutes. Rangers in a rush. A rush towards the title.
Wilde came charging down the left-hand side. He cut in and he passed to that arsehole again, Naismith. Who was free in the centre. And
let's talk about this game in the context of how we remember it.
Well, I'm remembering him now, so that's all that matters. But anyway, fair play to the wee dick. He scored an absolute peach of a shot from round the keeper, and that was his 11th goal of the season. That made it 2-0 within the space of 4 minutes.
Absolute scenes.
Absolute scenes.
You remember the man best as Walter Smith? John,
I do. Yeah, well, I watched the video. I'd remembered it, and I'd watched the video, and then, yeah, it was Bedlam, if you remember. People were jumping out the stands, and then there was this character, shall we call him, just in a suit, Walter Smith style, with one of the Walter Smith masks on, just going mental.
Brown Brooks, brilliant. You name it.
Yeah, he did, that's right.
Right, so just when we thought everything had died down after going 2-0 up within 4 minutes, no, it started again. 3-0 within 6 minutes.
Walter Smith in charge of Rangers for the final time. They're in again. Jelovic and Lafferty's onside. He scored again. This is incredible. This is remarkable. This is extraordinary. Wrapping up the title in no time.
Jelovic passes to Lafferty, who was free in space. Defence was absolutely shocking, in fairness. He scored his second goal there. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Great assist, as Scott says, and perfect first time finish. It was a great strike, and at that point I think we could all over. Sort of calm down. It was over. It was just party time.
I don't think we sat down the whole game, did we?
No, not at all. I think the type of game it was, being the last game, like I said, the tension was in the air. And once we scored, and then we scored again, and then we scored again, it was just mental. Mm-hmm. It was a fantastic way to start the match. And we knew that the title was won after 4 minutes, but certainly after 6 minutes, we knew it was over.
Love that kit as well. Love that kit.
Yep.
Oh, classic black one.
Black, yeah.
That's great.
So, I don't remember much of the game after that, to be honest. Certainly, the rest of the half petered out, as it were. A few chances here and there from each team. We never looked like losing a goal, mind you. Half-time came, you know, we were still in the party mood. 47th minute, Jelovic, absolutely stunning free kick into the top corner.
It's Jelovic! Brilliant! Just brilliant from the kick to Jelovic!
Yeah, as you mentioned earlier, Derek, Jelovic, he did have an act for scoring a free kick. It was a good strike. He'd been on fire at that point. I think he'd scored in the previous 4 games in the run-in to the title, so he was on fire. And him and Lafferty had formed a pretty good partnership towards the end of that season. But the goal itself was great. Great free kick.
Yep. Lafferty scores his hat-trick on the 52nd minute to make it 5-0. Lovely through ball. Lafferty goes past the one side of the player. The ball goes the other side. They meet up, and then he slots it past the keeper to go 5-0. And that's when, you know, I can't say much more than that. Absolutely, you know, stunning.
Lafferty wants the pass. He's got it. And is he in here? He is! Kyle Lafferty has got his hat-trick! It's 5-0 to the champions!
Well, it's certainly Rangers' day, and it's certainly Kyle.
I was tired of celebrating by then, I think.
I think that kind of sums up. It was a whole celebration day for the whole game. One wee bad point in the game is we did concede a goal to make it 5-1 in the 64th minute.
Yay! Here's
a minute.
It was a deflected free kick from Kelly, which went past Shagger, and it made it 5-1.
James Dayton, if I remember correctly.
Correct.
Lovely hair.
Yes. Knowledge bomb.
So just to kind of sum that game up, it was absolutely pandemonium for the fact that it was, as Scott said, you ended up getting tired of celebrating at the end of it. But what can I say about that game? It was obviously our last major top division honour we've won. It was Walter Smith's last ever game in charge, and what I just remember at the end of it as well is all the players and the management came to our side, to the fans were, and I remember Juffy doing his kind of famous celebration with the cup in his hand, mimicking Neil Lennon with the ears and Scott Brown with the way he acted as well when he scored as well.
There was a lot of heroes that day, but I was delighted for Davy Weir.
Yeah.
Who would have thought a stopgap would have effectively come a bit of a modern great for the club? And I think I'm right in saying that Walter Smith said it was the best signing of his second tenure.
I think that was probably correct, yeah. I mean, what can you say about the guy? He just kind of exemplifies what it meant to be a Rangers player.
Professionalism.
Yes. Exactly.
Absolutely. I would agree. And just the fact as well, it was obviously Walter Smith's last game. So from what I saw in the team that day, it was just a real hunger to win the title, not only for themselves, but for Walter as well, with it being his last game. And the team were terrific, not only in that game, but the whole end of the season. I think there was a point in that season where we were really struggling. Celtic had beat us at New Year, and we went on a bit of a bad run. But I think we turned that around when we beat them in the League Cup final at Hampden.
Yeah.
And then basically from then until the very end of the season, the team were pretty settled. It was mostly the same 11 every single week, and they were fantastic from that point forward, and totally deserved to win the title. What I'd say as well, Dils, going back to what you said earlier about, you know, Naismith, it's funny watching the game back now and seeing all those players. It's kind of bittersweet in a way to watch it, because you see the players, and a lot of them, like half that team, are no longer welcome at Ibrox, let's be honest. And it is a bittersweet feeling, you know, seeing the team that we had then, and just, you know, the way that a lot of them left the club kind of leaves a bad taste in the mouth.
Yeah, I mean, certainly you've got the likes of Lafferty and McGregor and Naishame as well. I mean, what annoys me is that they were good players. Lafferty was good when he wanted to be anyway, but certainly, you know, Shagger and Naishame, they were really good players. Rangers were their boyhood club. And for them to treat us like that, as you said, it is very, very bittersweet. Certainly we can look back in days like that and certainly celebrate it, and we can look at them in a different light as well. But certainly not taking away anything from what they've done during that run. They were fantastic, and just a pity that their attitudes in the end sullied it a wee bit. But never mind, you know, we look back in these days with great pride.
I think, Dale, we'll all just move on.
Yes.
I think it's what we're going to do.
We're going to move on. Yes. So we'll move on to the news section now.
Good evening. I'm Will McAvoy. Will McAvoy. I'm Will McAvoy. Good evening. I'm Will McAvoy. This is Newsnight from New York City. I'm Will McAvoy.
Right, so just a few things we've picked up over the last week or so. We got Airdrieonians in the third round of the Scottish Cup. Well, that should be a good match for that.
As long as
on a Friday night as well.
Yes, you're right, yeah.
Unfortunately, I won't be able to attend that evening as I'm going to see the Arctic Monkeys, but yes.
The less said about that, the better.
But Friday night, I quite like Friday night football. I went to the game against Airdrie at whatever their stadium's called. I'm drawing a blank just now. But I went there a couple of months ago, and it was really good. I think Friday night football's a good thing. I think we should have more games on a Friday.
Wee Nacho, he's going to Morton, is that correct?
That's correct.
Good luck to the guy.
I noticed that he came out and he had a wee bit of a pop at Ali, did they know, saying that he was a wee bit, you know, upset that his pal Ali had no picked him up again.
It's a tough one because McCoy never really tends to talk about things like that in the media, but just to his credit.
With Novo, like, he has, as you say, been having a wee pop in the press at Ali. The reality is, you know, we shouldn't be signing Nacho Novo at this point. You know, we really shouldn't. And obviously, he's a hero for a great deal of the support. And you know, I think we all love the guy. He's great. But at this point in time, we really shouldn't be signing players like Nacho Novo just because, you know, of his age. And does he have the required quality? I mean, even at this level, I'm sure he could do a job, as they say. But really, I think we should be looking to promote youth players and also players that will see us good when we actually do get back up to the Premier League. But as I say, good luck to Nacho. I'm sure he'll do well at Morton. I think he hit the post in his debut. I think he started the game. But yeah, I hope he does well.
One other bit of Rangers news I've got here is there was a bit of an uproar during the week there, because on the Rangers Megastore website, there was a rubber duck put on sale for £4.99, and it was to promote the club, but they put a picture of a Celtic rubber duck on there. So it was in green and white with the Celtic badge.
You're really struggling this week, Derek.
I just thought that was a wee bit of a trivial news there. I think the supplier company, it turned out that they do a lot for loads of different clubs, and it's been an error on their part, but there was a few fans.
Boycott! Boycott!
There was a few fans in uproar, but it was just a bit of harmless fun, I think.
Would there not be some suggestion that there was a Celtic fan working in the IT department who'd somehow managed to impose the image in the Rangers website? But I think that was quickly shot down, as you say. I think the company itself do ducks, and what kind of company is this? They do ducks for Rangers, Celtic, Man United, all the big clubs, and somehow, as an error, it managed to find its way on our website. So someone's getting their knuckles wrapped.
Yeah, I mean, just on the fact that you read a report there that, you know, maybe a Celtic fan had got into their IT, that's the kind of conspiracy theories we'd expect from them. So let's get away from that kind of silly nonsense there, but it's quite a funny story. That's you tell. Another wee bit of trivia thing here for you. New Sunderland coach Charlie Otway, full name is Anthony Philip David Terry Frank Donald Stanley Jerry Gordon Stephen James Otway, was named after the entire 1973 Queen's Park Rangers first team.
I would concur with Scott. My God, what a story. You've had a slow news week. But do you know what? I hate stories like that. I must admit, they do annoy me when they get, you know, the idiot parents get the names like of all the players in their like most favourite team, like for their son. Doesn't it ring true with me? Something doesn't sit well. I'm very uneasy with it.
Enough said about that. Right. So if you've got any,
cut that.
That's a good one to keep in that. So please get in touch with us if you've named your child after any famous football players. Certainly, obviously we've got the David Cooper Templeton there, or the David Cooper Templeton Clause, as some people call him. But certainly, get in touch with us for there. What was that name for?
Oh, it was quite good. I've never heard that one.
The David Cooper Templeton Clause.
Yeah, I've never heard that. That's quite good.
That's quite good actually.
Right, so just a quick wrap up here, just a few shout outs. Just want to say thanks to Shane and Chris Graham and Peter and all the guys at the Crow Pod for a wee shout out and try to promote us there as well. Thanks a lot for that. Obviously, we are the people as well. They're back out up and running after Todd's honeymoon. Also to the guys at Heart and Hand. Fantastic podcast as always. Also, so all the kind of Twitter guys that have been following us and giving us shout outs as well. Pamela RFC, there's another one. Ross McAdam and everybody like that. If you want to get in contact with us, you can contact us through our Twitter, which is @iReadyPod. If you've got any questions or anything like that, respond to us on our Twitter at #IQs. That's AYEQS. Mm-hmm. Also, we've got an email address, which is iReadyPod@hotmail.com. And we'll certainly get back to you as soon as we can. Just a final thanks to Scott and John for joining us today. It's been emotional.
It's been something. I don't know what it's been, but it's certainly been something.
Yes, we'll certainly maybe get you back soon to join me and Dave on the conversation. We'll see what we can do about maybe getting another pod out next week. Dave's not back for another week and a bit yet, and by the time he gets settled back, so it might be a couple of weeks, but we'll see what we can do next week and we'll try and get one out. So thanks for listening and take care. Bye. Your cue to say bye as well.
Oh really? I didn't think we got to say bye. Bye. Apologies.
Right. Done. That kind of wraps it up.